Live from Auburn, the sports capital of Alabama, this is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7. And online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Oh, there we go. I wasn't hearing myself. Hello, everybody. Welcome in. It is the Tuesday edition of The Drive. It has been a rather gloomy and dreary sort of Tuesday. Earlier today, just, you know, overcast and a little bit of mist. It was sort of, you know, one of those when you went out in it for a little while, you realized, oh, you're getting damp. And then, yeah, you couldn't help noticing you were getting wet a while ago. So we're getting a little rain today and tomorrow. But, you know, looking at the forecast, I sort of like the way it plays out. It looks like the rain's going to be out of here in time for the weekend. We've got big basketball on tap tonight. Auburn is in Nashville to take on the Vanderbilt Commodores. The other number one team, Alabama, is in Texas. And there are some big ball games around the country this evening.
The other top five team in the SEC, the Florida Gators, are on the road against Mississippi State. I think it's fair to wonder.
I think that's a pretty good matchup for Mississippi State.
It's fair to wonder if all three of the SEC's top five teams are going to be able to hold on to those rankings. And I know Tennessee's close if they're not in the top five themselves. So I mean, you got some teams near the very top of the league, on top of the two teams that are ranked number one in different polls right now. We'll see if all three of them win on the road in the league tonight.
I think there are six or seven top 25 teams on the road tonight. And yes, there will be losses involving top 25 teams. Very well likely losses top 10 teams on the road, and very well could be a loss or more from a top five team on the road tonight. Because these, you know, in this league, it is extremely difficult to go on the road and win. Vandy has only lost one game at home this year. Texas, you know, it's funny, you look at them, and a couple of weeks ago, I might have thought Texas would have the best shot. But Texas has been struggling again lately. They've lost three of their last four. They're now 4-7 in conference. It appears it's a pretty good matchup for Alabama on the road there in Austin, but we'll see. And we'll talk about those and other matchups in college basketball.
You know, when I'm late for work, I don't linger in the lobby, Bill. I don't know what's
going on. But if somebody I don't know, sometimes you do. If somebody's on the air talking,
we'll see. But no,
I mean, what's he supposed to do? If he comes in right now,
we'll swap places.
You'd have to get up and move.
Yes, exactly. That's exactly right. So
it's okay.
We'll see. We'll see what happens in the league tonight. But it's tough to win on the road, and with those three, with those three programs, they've got big games coming up. So it's easy to look ahead.
Well, especially Auburn and Alabama, the teams that are number one, depending on which poll you look at. Auburn number one in the AP, and Alabama number one in the coaches poll. They play each other in Tuscaloosa on Saturday, and we were talking about it a little yesterday, and I've heard some more talk about it today, about you know, who there is more pressure on. Hey, it all depends on tonight. It all depends on tonight, because if both teams win tonight, then I think there's more pressure on Alabama to win at home, since there is a game, the season-ending regular season game in Auburn. So if Auburn were to win tonight, that would put a lot of pressure on Alabama. They'd be basically like two games behind and have to win. So I would think that the more pressure on which team, Auburn or Alabama, depends on tonight. Because if Auburn loses tonight and Alabama wins, then the pressure's on Auburn, because they're a game back, and they'd be two back of Alabama if they lost on Saturday.
Well, and I think either team coming off a loss would be feeling a little bit more vulnerable and a little bit more pressure. Both of these teams...
Well, what if both teams are coming off losses? That sort of evens it back up a little bit, doesn't it? But it still puts pressure on Alabama to win the home game.
Right, and with both teams coming off a loss means Alabama didn't gain any ground on Auburn. You would still have you'd still have a relative tie. You'd still have the winner of the game being in first place by the although a thinner margin, but they'd be in first place.
But both teams win, both teams lose. I think there's more pressure on Alabama I guess there's more pressure on Alabama in three of the four possibilities. Both teams win, both teams lose, or Alabama loses. There's more pressure on Alabama in those cases. For Auburn, there's more pressure on the Tigers if they were to lose tonight and Alabama win in Austin.
And no matter what happens with Alabama, if Auburn doesn't respond and bounce back tonight, I think there's a ton of pressure on because it's
no question.
Because it's not just a two-team race in the conference. So if Auburn were to drop this game tonight, now you're talking about a two-game losing streak,
and if Florida is to win on the road, you've only got a one-game lead over them, and they've got the tiebreaker.
They've got the tiebreaker. They've got games coming up against Alabama, and you're going to Alabama you're going to Alabama on Saturday,
and Florida's got Bama in Gainesville.
I believe that's right.
Yep. So I mean, that would be that's what Florida's hoping for right now. They're looking for Auburn and Alabama to take a loss and then knock each other around.
That's why the game in Auburn was so critical for Florida, because they had sort of an inside track. They had a parlay that they could hit that would give them a chance to maybe be in contention for the conference title at the end. One of the games they had to have was in Auburn. They get it now. You know, if they can win the games where they're favored, and they can knock off Alabama when that game comes up, suddenly they have significant hopes for the for the regular season conference title.
Yeah, that's why it was so important.
Especially if Auburn were to drop another game.
Right. That's why it was so important, as we were talking about trying to put a little distance, and there had been that little bit of separation that could have been huge had Auburn been able to beat Florida, but that didn't happen. It wasn't even close to happening.
Just a monster day in the conference, though. One of the biggest midweek. I mean, just to think about the teams in action, how vulnerable some of these top three, top five teams might be. I mean, Tennessee going
It's crazy that's tonight. Yeah. I mean, you've got 1, 2, 3, and 5 all playing on the road tonight in this league.
Yeah, it's amazing. I mean, you've got four real threats on the road for the four teams that are ranked in the top five in one of the polls. So I mean,
would you be stunned if any? I mean, would you be stunned at any of those teams losing?
Have you seen lines? Have you seen point spreads?
I think Auburn is the biggest favorite. Auburn's the road team.
Auburn's the most secure favorite of the four. So Auburn is an 8.5-point favorite using
That's
ESPN
dropped a little
bet.
Bit.
Yeah, it's dropped about a point and a half in a day or in a couple of hours today. Florida is now an underdog to Mississippi State on ESPN bet.
The dogs. Wow. Well, some other people then are feeling the way I was feeling, that this is a pretty good matchup for State.
Dogs are a 1.5-point favorite on ESPN bet. Tennessee is a 2.5-point favorite in Lexington against Kentucky, and Alabama is a 4.5-point favorite in Austin against
Texas.
That's
really funny that Kentucky beat Tennessee in Knoxville, and now they're an underdog at home.
Yeah, amazing. Although trends, how you played last week matters more than maybe how you played.
It was just a couple of weeks ago. Kentucky's
got Butler back, but Tennessee did look very impressive.
They did, but I mean, last game means so much. That's why it's a little bit of a surprise that Florida's an underdog. But I mean, if looking at it, as big a win as that was for the Gators on Saturday, this quick turnaround and continuing to be on the road, back-to-back road games against another ranked team, I can understand why a lot of people are liking Mississippi State.
It would be a pretty disappointing loss for Florida, though, coming off a win at Auburn that gets you back in this conversation to then go to Starkville and drop one. Not to say they can't do it, because Mississippi State looking to add to their tournament resume as well. But I'm thinking these top five teams go
Four teams in the top four?
Yeah, the four teams in the top five.
Four teams in the top five. There's going to be at least one loss, I feel. At least one loss.
So somebody's going down.
Yeah, I think so.
Okay.
But I wouldn't be shocked at multiple teams falling tonight. But then, you know, it sure wouldn't be a shock if they all 4-1. Auburn and Alabama are the only two SEC teams that are unbeaten on the road.
Yeah, I mean it and Florida is
in
a team
conference,
that's and like we said, Florida's an underdog, and Kentucky has beaten Tennessee already this season in Knoxville. So I think there's all four of these teams face real challenges tonight. Auburn, we talked about it a little bit yesterday with Brian Matthews, like the big worries coming out of the Florida game that aren't necessarily things that you can attribute to Florida. You know, Auburn has been less than automatic around the basket compared to earlier in the season.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something that, yeah, I mean, yes, Florida's front court did a good job, but Auburn had in other games.
Yeah. It's not like lately Auburn has been, scoring at a high percentage inside. I mean, they've been under 50% in multiple games.
And the way Florida was able to attack at the 3-point line, Bill, you talked about a lot yesterday, like that is a, something you hadn't really seen a team succeed with in conference play against Auburn. And Florida just, I mean, so many open looks at the 3-point line against a defense that had really played well at the perimeter.
Yeah. It's, I mean, twofold for, I mean, at least for Auburn. They've got to get better play out of some guys. I mean, they can't have Denver Jones go scoreless, Chad Baker-Mazzara. Only have a couple of baskets. But inside is where Auburn should have the advantage tonight against Vandy. They've got a height advantage. Vandy has been pretty solid at holding its own on the boards, but Auburn needs to be able to show its strengths and its advantages inside tonight against Vandy. I was just looking at a story we were talking about yesterday about would Vandy storm the court if they won. Did you see there's a story on ESPN?
What, they hired the snipers or something?
No. It's they've come up with what they feel is a policy that would work, but it would be
Shepherds.
No, they're going to allow post game celebrations on the court after a 1 minute delay.
Okay.
To end the game.
So they're going
to
go Clemson.
So they're going to say, you can storm the court. That's right. You can storm the court, but let everybody get off.
Which I believe.
You can do that because they don't want to have to pay another $500,000.
And I believe there is a there's something in the conference rule book that sort of allows that, right? Like that's not a safety violation the way that storming the court with players and officials still on the floor is considered sort of a safety risk. So yeah, that's an interesting. Hey, you know, maybe the students can turn into like a New Year's Eve, turn into a countdown, right? If you win, right?
Count it down, get ready for the minute countdown.
Yeah, maybe lower a balloon or have something, you know, have something pop or something when it's
trying to think with Vandy. I don't know. They can lower the ship.
Yeah, there you go. An anchor. Drop an anchor.
Drop an anchor.
Yeah.
Anchor down.
Exactly. See, that's for a free idea from us there.
That's a great one. Yeah. I like that. But hopefully they don't get that opportunity. Vandy has won four straight at home.
You know, you could do it,
including wins over Kentucky and Tennessee.
At Neville, what you could do is you could have a replica eagle do a lap, right?
Have it land at center court at zero.
Time it exactly to a minute and have that thing. You could do. I think turning
a drone. Have a drone made up as like an eagle.
Yeah, there you go. If you can't get the bird to do it in exactly a minute, you know, maybe.
I don't know if you want to do it inside either with the eagle, but sure, but yeah, this could be a huge win for Vandy. I mean, no question. They feel like they can beat anybody, especially at home. This is a team Mark Byington's got. I mean, he's got them believing in themselves and has really done an outstanding job. Man, they're going for there's already, four or five SEC teams with 20 wins. Vandy would be at 18 with their next one.
Yeah, Vandy would be 18-6 with a win over Auburn tonight. It would be, like you said, Bill, the third time they've beaten a really good SEC team this year. At least, you know, when you think about the SEC teams ranked – at the very top of the league. Vanderbilt has a win over Tennessee in Nashville. They beat them on January 18th. They beat Kentucky in Lexington on January 25th. Or no, they beat Kentucky in Nashville too.
In Nashville, yeah.
When Kentucky was ranked in the top 10, and like you said, they almost beat Florida.
Down in Gainesville.
Yeah, that game, and then Florida pulls away a little bit at the end. But well, it's
10 or 11 point.
Florida ends up winning by 11, but you know Vanderbilt's a Vanderbilt's a team that has been plucky against really quality SEC teams. They've got one of the top scorers in the SEC, the North Texas transfer Jason Edwards, and they've got got guys who have played major conference ball. Hoggard from Michigan State. Yeah, Michigan State alum who was there for 4 years and played a lot of basketball for Izzo. The nine or ten, maybe even 11 new players on the roster for Coach Byington, and they've gelled. He's bet big on experience, and he's bet big on some guys that maybe, you know, it's a little bit reminiscent of the way Chris Beard assembled Ole Miss at the beginning last season. You're seeing other coach. I mean, it's a mix of highly experienced veterans and some mid-major guys who want to get their first taste of SEC basketball.
Yeah, so, I mean, quite a challenge for Auburn tonight. 6 o'clock tip, 5:30 airtime over on Wings 94.3. We're just underway here on the Tuesday Drive. Love for you to join in. You can call us on the Drive hotline, sponsored by Skybar. That number's 334-321-1390.
You can also text the show, 334-564-1840, on the Drive text box, presented by Southeastern Industrial Contractors. They also sponsor the podcast, available wherever you get your favorite podcast. A note about tonight's game, Bill. Chad is about 15, 16 points away from 1,000 for his career as a D1 player. In D1 basketball, Chad Baker-Mazzara closing in on 1,000 career points, could get it. I think Auburn would love to get it.
Well, it'd be great to have him get it if he, you know, that means he gets at least 15.
I think it's 16. I think he's 16 points away from 1,000, and Auburn would love a bounce back from CBM.
All right, we'll get to our first break of the show. Come on in and join us here on the Tuesday Drive.
The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck. And Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7. Online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of the Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email the Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the Drive here on this Tuesday afternoon. Bill and Dan, Drew at the controls. Again, love for you to join in. Anything you want to talk about sports-wise? Are you, our listeners, after the performance by Auburn the other day, you feel like it's just something? And I have sort of a feeling like this. I feel like it's something that it was going to happen, and I wasn't shocked that it happened against Florida. I was a little surprised at the way it appeared on Saturday, but I just sort of felt like, you know, Auburn was on a 15-game winning streak, and, you know, when you have that, a couple of things can happen. One, you can sort of just feel like, yeah, we're going to roll out there and we just go through the motions and we're better than everybody. Or two, you can start feeling a little bit of the pressure because that winning streak adds up a little bit. I think it very well could have been a combination of those two things. And then you run into an extremely talented team that was very, very motivated. Florida, I mean, this was very close to critical for Florida to be able to stay in the race.
I'm a little concerned about how much the injuries are sort of weighing down Jahni Broome's performance. Like that's the one thing.
I don't think there's any question about that, though.
Yeah, it's how long it's going to take for him to get back to the guy who looked more like a player of the year. And having said that, he's still a 2010 machine.
Yeah, but it's taking him more shots to get to that close to 20. The other day, I mean, 8 for 19 is not what you expect from Jahni.
Yeah, if efficiency took a hit on Saturday, and like we said, it was the third time he's missed 10 or more shots since coming back from the injury against Tennessee, and that's something he wasn't doing very often at all in games previously. So, yeah, I think Jahni getting back to someone who is Just so difficult for teams around the basket is crucial for Auburn. And getting back to defending the 3-point line, like we said yesterday, I mean, it was just sort of a shocking display by Florida, the number of open looks they were able to get at the 3-point line on Saturday.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the defensive breakdowns were uncharacteristic by Auburn, and we'll see if they can they can right the ship against Vandy, a team that doesn't shoot that many threes, but doesn't make that many mistakes either.
No, they don't. They don't turn it over a lot. They're not a great 3-point shooting team. They've got a few guys that are above 35%, which is fine, but that's not what they usually do. But yeah, you do wonder, and I've you know, there's been some talk about this, and it's funny because I've seen some folks concerned that Bruce keeps playing so many players and wondering why did you make these subs at certain times. But I look at it, and really Auburn's only playing 7 right now. Bruce is really only playing 7 players, you know, around 15 minutes or more, and it just is appearing more that they're just a little dead legged right now, and that's a shame because they've had their open midweek.
Beyond Chaney and Tahad, there's not a defined role.
No.
Out there for anyone else, and that's something that's whether it's Turtle or Chris or Ja'Kai or JP Pegues, you know what I mean? Like there's different players that I think Auburn would have imagined would be in that mix, and in crunch time, it's just not the case. I do, you know, the point I made yesterday, Bill, about Janai, when you pull him off the floor, I mean, do you have enough shooting from the other, unless you move somebody sort of out of position to the four, right? Like that's where Auburn misses Jalen Williams more than anything else. When you think about his ability to hit from the outside and the fact that when you had him at the four, you felt very confident. I know Chaney can hit a shot or two, but you felt very confident about your shooting from the bigs with Jalen Williams out there. And when you pull Janai, you know, if your two posters are some combination of Dylan, Chaney, and Turtle, I do
the,
wonder.
The middle, you know what happens is the middle gets very clogged. The basket gets very clogged around the basket because they're going to give. I said it yesterday. You know, Chaney can hit a three. He's gotten better at that. But they're going to give him that. I mean, teams would go, okay, stay out there and shoot the three while we come in, and we'll have a better shot of rebounding your missed shots than you have a chance of making those shots.
And there's not space for the other guys,
right?
Like you think the other exactly shooters, right. The other shooters on the 3-point line can't get the space without running into the defense. So it's something where, and I don't know the answer, right? Because the answer isn't play Janai more minutes.
He's playing as many or more minutes now since he's come back from the injury that he was playing before.
Yeah, I do wonder at times if you know, remember before the season when we talked about what it would look like if Auburn went one post and four, you know, if you thought about playing Chad or Miles at the four. Mm-hmm. I wonder if that's going to need to be something to be considered for, you know, to create enough spacing out there because that would solve, you'd create another problem, right, as far as your rim protection and stuff. But I mean, I think if you tried a, what do you think of this? I mean, I don't know if you've seen.
Against some teams, you could do that.
Yeah, I mean.
Against Florida, there's no way.
But it would need to be, it would specifically need to be.
You might be able to do it tonight.
It would need to be Tahad, Denver, Miles, Chad,
and
a post.
Right.
Either Denver or well,
either,
either Dylan
Chaney or Janai or
yeah, any of the three. And, you know, depending on what you need from you know in the role. I mean,
in the perfect world it'd be Janai because he's the guy that can stretch the floor as well himself.
Right. And that I don't know if they've pushed that button this year. But I'm curious.
If they have, it's only been for a very brief period.
Yeah, but I don't
recall it.
I thought Florida was the first team this year to really, for extended periods of time, take advantage of the lack of shooting, especially when Janai's not on the floor from the lack of ability to space the floor for the rest of the Auburn guys.
Yeah, so
We'll see.
Yeah, we will. And like I said, you could do something like that tonight. Vandy is their tallest guy is 6'8". So I mean, you could have a 6'10" or 6'11" guy there in the post and go with. I would think you'd probably go Chad, even though Miles has been a good rebounder. Miles 6'6", Chad 6'7".
You need them both. I mean, they're both will be out there presumably. Yep. We'll see what Auburn tries and how Auburn bounces back from the loss to Florida. I think just like LSU, like just because a team is undersized doesn't mean it's not going to be a really physical. Really, sometimes those teams are more physical underneath, right? When you get a strong undersized guy, mm-hmm. like those battles are just, you know, all the more violent underneath for rebounds. I think Auburn should be able to exploit their size at times, especially on the glass. But I don't think it's going to be easy in Memorial.
Despite the fact, I mean, yeah, Auburn has won 7 of the last 8, but I mean, you look throughout history, even when Vandy wasn't nearly as good as they are now, it's been difficult to go in there and come away with a win. So yeah,
McLaughlin is the Georgia native, Boston College transfer. He leads the team in rebounding, and he is, like you said, he's 6'7", and I think some folks wonder if he's actually 6'7", sort of a guy playing, you know, playing bigger than he is.
Yeah, Bruce was quick to note that he's a BC.
Shockingly, a BC product. Shockingly.
Yeah. All right, let's get to our bottom of the hour break. We're just a quarter of the way in. Plenty of time for you to join us with anything on your mind here on the Tuesday Drive.
On Auburn Opelika's Sports Leader, ESPN 106.7.
Welcome back into the drive here on this Tuesday afternoon. Bill and Dan here in the studio, and
can't soak up the sun on a rainy day like this one, Bill.
Not here.
Not here.
But again, it's not a bad. I mean, you know, not bad.
Basketball watching weather.
It is perfect basketball watching weather, and we're just an hour away from the pregame over on Wings 94.3.
Talked about it a lot in the first couple segments. Loaded slate of SEC games.
Man, tonight. It is crazy. I mean, just at 6 o'clock. In addition to the Auburn-Vandy game, Florida at Mississippi State, number 3 versus number 22, and Tennessee at Kentucky. Those all 3 at 6. So the Auburn game is on the SEC Network. The Tennessee-Kentucky matchups ESPN, and Florida-Mississippi State on the Deuce.
Yeah, we got anything interesting on the injury report? I should check to see if
you know, I have not seen that.
No, let me see if we've got a. You know, I know there's. There should be an update SEC men's basketball, and coming out of the Florida game, is Chad the biggest injury concern? You know, after the shot he took to the head late, and just sort of the general
lack
of comfort he had.
He just didn't look nearly as quick as he has.
Nobody listed, by the way, on the Auburn injury.
Yeah, I don't think it's anything that was going to keep him out. So if it's not going to keep you out of the game, you don't list it. And Bruce yesterday saying, you know, sure, Chad's not 100%, but there's no reason to really go into detail as to what might be bothering him, because other teams are going to target that if they know.
You know, I know there was the questionable, doubtful, probable, you know, options that you're supposed to assign based on the percentage of likelihood. Bill, if you were a coach suddenly forced to deal with an injury report like SEC coaches are, you know, this season, wouldn't you be tempted just to list guys who were out? Like wouldn't you just be saying, like, all right, he's definitely out, so he's out, and the rest of it is sort of
everybody else is probable.
Yeah, you list the whole roster.
Yeah,
the whole roster is probable, except guys that
or
you know.
Questionable. Or make everybody questionable.
Yeah, I mean, because
they're not doubtful, but it's questionable. I mean, you never know.
And I know this exists specifically so that there aren't gamblers sort of seeking inside information about, like, oh, is so and so secretly not going to play, even though he's not on the depth chart, or is so and so listed as questionable or doubtful or probable, but we know he's definitely not playing and things like that. And you know, I have no idea if it's worked or if it hasn't worked. I get the idea behind it.
Absolutely.
Making these things official, but I also know how desperately coaches want to hold on to information that you need unless you need to get it out of them. Unless they have to disclose it.
Yeah, well, I mean, the thing is that there's no reason to ever let people know that he's banged up, but he's going to be able to play. That's just...
His right elbow's really hurting, though.
Yeah, his wrist is bothering him, his left ankle or something, because then somebody's going to accidentally step on that ankle.
Right.
Or you know,
and I don't think,
knock the whatever side that he's hurt.
I don't think teams have been targeting Jani's injured parts.
No.
I just think that's the way that seems to be what happens when Jani Broome plays basketball, right?
Well,
is that they, you know, it's physical and limbs go flying and hopefully, I mean, that's to me that what's been illustrated, even though Auburn played pretty well in the game without him, Bill, what's been illustrated to me now over the last couple of weeks is that despite the injuries, it is just so important for Jani Broome to stay available for Auburn. And you know, and another, you know, if you were to, it's like a Jenga tower, right? Like if you were to keep piling stuff on as far as the list of injuries,
mm-hmm.
at some point he's going to be unavailable. And at that point, I wonder about Auburn's ability to hang with the best teams in the SEC.
And Bruce really made a point yesterday of talking about how he's had players in the past that he knew of players that in Jani's situation would feel like they needed to sit out for a while to get to be 100%. But he said that's not Jani. Jani just says, tape it up and I want to get out there and play. Not that it's making things any worse, but I'm sure that it's delaying his return to 100%.
Yeah, and I have no idea about like what circumstances, you know, what different circumstances would lead Jani to not play right now. But it was like if Auburn had, you know, if Auburn had dropped a couple of those games in January that they need, you know what I mean? Those real close games in January to teams like Texas and South Carolina and Georgia. Like if Auburn were further from the top of the SEC, or if Auburn were, you know, if it were like maybe it would be easier for a guy battling those kind of injuries to call it a season, or at least take an extended period of time to get healthy before getting back out there.
But if you weren't number one or competing for number one or at the top of the league, it would be a whole lot easier to go, hey, you know, we're all right. We're not going to win the regular season title, but I can get myself ready for either the conference championship or the postseason. Something like that.
No, but it definitely speaks to what kind of competitor he is, and it also, it's just like that's one of the things that scared me before the season, Bill. Is it's great to have a veteran team. It's wonderful to have a veteran team, and that plays itself out in so many different ways for Auburn. But the downside of a veteran team is that there's a lot of miles on those tires. Right, like there's a lot of those guys have played a lot of college basketball, and you don't really see. I mean, we don't know we don't know what the. I mean, you have the NBA if you want to use that as an example, but like we don't really see a lot of 150, 160 game careers in college basketball. We don't know sort of, you know, what kind of damage that can do. And I think Jani's injuries have been more freak injuries than lingering things that have built up.
Not like, oh, well, you know, eventually this was going to happen because he keeps playing so much. No.
No, it's not like, the engine's been leaking oil for a while and, you know, this was destined or anything like that. But if it were to manifest, Bill, this is when, like, this is the month where I think that wear and tear for guys that have played 5 years of college basketball, like this is, and Auburn's not the only team in the SEC dealing with that.
No,
like there are a lot of
veteran teams in this league,
and I think between now and the end of the season, that's something to watch for. Is how you know those guys respond to more. You know, it's a lot of work in a fifth season as college basketball players.
You're absolutely right. 334-321-1390. That's the Drive Hotline, sponsored by Skybar. And let's get to it. And Dan is up first. Hey, Dan.
Hey, Dan.
Hey, guys. I think with Janai, I think he's feeling pretty good. I just think that he's not doing anything to risk re-injuring it. So, you know, if a guy gets a breakaway and he knows he can run him down and block it, he's probably just letting the guy get the score and not really, you know, putting himself in jeopardy. And right now, it's probably the smartest thing to do, because as long as he's back to total health when we hit the end of the year, then this team can do, you know, go as far as it can go, you know. So it's just, I think that's where you see him maybe not getting as many blocks and jumping up as high, like nonstop trying to block every single thing. You know, I think he's just, you know, making sure that he's staying in the game and he's not getting injured. So,
no, that's interesting. You know, the thought that he's had to dial it back on defense, especially, you know, to preserve the ankle and the foot. And the shoulder and the elbow as well, but I think that's an interesting point, because we've expressed more the concern of how it's impacted his game offensively, but yeah, he's not the black hole defensively that he was.
He's still blocking a couple of shots a game.
Yeah, and the metrics are still there. He's a very very strong defensive player, but not so. That's a good point, Dan.
Yeah, one small thing about the last game. You know, one thing I noticed about Florida's big guys, and they were driving me crazy, but those guys are extremely physical, and they, even when you don't have the ball, they were pushing us out and pushing us out and pushing us out. And very rarely did Janai get a good shot close to the basket. A lot of times he was, you know, tossing up stuff, you know, hoping that it would go in. And it's just he needed to work harder to get better shots closer.
You know, that's what drove me crazy about the foul on the box out with the three-pointer in the air, is that game had been so physical offensive glass the whole game, and then suddenly Dylan Cardwell is called for a box out, you know, pushing the Florida player back, and they get the back-to-back possessions with the Klavchar three-pointers. But it's like, Condon, I don't think it would be all that surprising to learn that number 21 for Florida, Condon, was like a phenom in Australian rules football before coming over to basketball, because that's what he turns it into rugby down low.
Yeah, well, I think we can learn a lot from him. Well, like I wish Dylan could do more of that, where just look, you're a bigger, stronger guy. Just use your body to kind of just push people out of the way. And don't reach shove. If you put your hands out and a guy moves, you're going to get the ball on you every time.
Yep, absolutely.
You got to do it like you have no arms.
Yeah,
yeah.
It's
kind of know how to do it.
There, what you know, and Charles, you know, when you were talking about guys that were Vandy may not have anybody bigger than 6'7", 6'8", but they know what they're doing. That's how Charles Barkley rebounded so well. He had impeccable timing. But he also knew how to use that backside and those legs to clear people out without having to use use his arms.
How many times did DeShaun Murray finish a game with eight or more rebounds? And he was he's not one of the four tallest guys who participated in the entire thing. Like there's absolutely. And by the way, Condon is player of the week. Alex Condon for Florida, earning, you know, as part of that victory over Auburn and the two wins Florida recorded last week, he picks up an SEC Player of the Week award for the Gators.
Yeah, one last thing too. I think one guy that really, you know, he can be like such a huge asset, but then he can be a big liability. You know, is Cardwell. It's like he can have a game, you know, where he gets you know 12 rebounds and he's getting offensive rebounds and pitching it out for open threes. And then he can have another game where he gets three rebounds and, you know, and misses every free throw. And then you're just like, man, it's like, if we could just somehow find a way to get him to be consistent, like as the good Cardwell. And I mean, cause he's a huge asset when he's up there getting all the offensive rebounds and doing all that and blocking the shots. But it's just like it just depends. Every game's different with him. It drives me crazy. But
consistency would be the word. I know they've talked about the search for consistency with Dylan in the past, and that's Dan, because you observe the team really closely. I'm sort of curious. You know, Bill's raised the point, like the rotation. It's tough to win anywhere with a seven-man rotation, right? But I think especially with what Bruce sort of demands offensively and defensively. Like it, I don't
think he was expecting to have more than seven.
Yeah, and I don't know. I don't know.
On down the stretch,
I don't know if help is like. I don't know where help is coming from. I mean, we'll see if Jakai can play his way back into the good graces. If Turtle's minutes can go up, but I don't really know the answer there, Dan. And it's a worthwhile concern coming out of the Florida game.
Yeah, well, I just think some of the guys just need. It's the same thing. Like so with Cardwell is like. With Chaney, you know, it's like he can have a game where he's just totally dominant, and then he can have another game where he just totally disappears. So it's like we just got to find ways to get everybody. You know, it's like when you make a great play on one end, then you turn around and you make a great play on the other end because you're into the game and you're excited and you're fired up and you want to make a difference. It's like I said, some of our guys, you know, we know our guys that are going to be consistent. I mean, we know Tahan's going to get his shots, and he's going to make enough of them. We know Baker most of the time is that way. You know, Miles is the same. I'm glad Miles is driving a lot more because he's got a really good game going to the basket.
You know, it makes his three-point shot tougher to defend.
Yep.
When you think that he might put it on the floor and drive past you, you can't have your hands up like you're being robbed. Like you got to approach him like real. You got to play real defense against him on the perimeter.
And you feel like if he's fouled, he's going to make his free throws too. So.
Yes, yeah, I think our guys, especially like Miles and Chad, could take maybe a page out of our point guard Todd's thing. He doesn't always go all the way to the basket. A lot of times he'll just go to an open area and shoot a jumper. And I think Miles is really good at that, but he doesn't do it that often. Mm-hmm. It's either shoot the three or go all the way to the basket. So I've noticed a little bit more of him kind of shooting that mid-range game. I mean, you can go a long way with. I mean, we've had guys in the past when we went and played Syracuse in the very end that just we lived off that 2-point mid range jumper that we could just make consistently and you know it's almost like it's all the way to the basket or shoot the three and I think we could definitely take advantage of that mid range game.
Well, the mid range has been beaten out of a lot of kids, sort of you know, and I do think
been coached out of a lot of kids.
Well, I do think that the sort of the Kobe jumper, you know, the long two with you know your heels on the 3-point line. Like I get the inefficiency of extremely deep 2-point shots versus just settling for the 3-pointer instead. But no, I think there's absolutely some value in. If you can do it efficiently and you can make it a weapon, absolutely some tighter you know it can make your 3-point shooters and your post players tougher to guard if you can lean on that occasionally as an option too.
Yeah, I feel good about tonight. Appreciate it, guys.
All right, Dan. Appreciate the call. We'll get to our final break of hour number one. Brett, you're up when we come back. Here on the Tuesday Drive.
The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck.
1067. And online at ESPNAU.com.
To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email us at TheDrive@ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back in. Final few minutes of hour number one here on the Tuesday Drive. And right back to The Drive hotline. And Brett is up next. Hey, Brett.
Hey, Brett.
Hey, guys.
Brett, are you calling because of the news that Clayton Kershaw is returning to the Dodgers? Clayton Kershaw signing 18 seasons. Yeah. Clayton Kershaw returning for number 18.
Yeah, I heard that, Dan. But you know, it was already pretty much a done deal, and just. Probably pass a physical.
One of the great careers, I would say, if he finishes his career as a Dodger, hard to think of too many pitchers in the last 50 years who played for one team their whole career who had a better career than Clayton Kershaw.
Oh, no doubt.
Hard to think of too many who played their whole career with one team
haven't been that many who played their whole career with one team.
There have not been that
even
many.
Hall of Famers, absolutely.
I can't think of a better way for him to conclude it, Dan, with winning 3 out of 6 World Series. So looking for another one this year. But, hey, what I called about, I'm unlike a lot of folks, I'm expecting Auburn to play very well tonight. I'm expecting a 9-point win. I don't think they're going to be coasting out there to guard the three, and I think they're going to be going to the front of the rim rather than a lot of finger rolls.
Well, I'll tell you what, Brett. If they don't, then Bruce Pearl is going to lose his mind, because I mean, I can't imagine after that performance Saturday and knowing this staff that they expect anything less.
Yeah. Well. All right, guys. Y'all have a great evening.
All right, Brett. Appreciate it.
Good stuff, Brett.
No, I expect Auburn's effort to be obvious tonight. That doesn't mean that doesn't guarantee a win. I mean, you still got to make shots and hope that Vandy doesn't just, go unconscious or anything out there. But no, I mean, it looked like, again, I said it earlier, that either Auburn was tired or, something. They just didn't seem to have the energy that they usually have. And that was after having, a good period of time at home to be getting ready for that Florida game. This one, Auburn had shown that energy all year long. You'd never been concerned about the energy, the effort that Auburn was giving. And I don't think that's going to be the case tonight.
McLaughlin's a tough character. He's a tough customer. He's not the reason Bruce was talking about wasn't just because he's a Boston College player. Oh, that's a big reason why. But he's also been a key part of especially Vanderbilt's best performances, like their wins. He's a good player, and he's someone who I think Bruce sees a lot of the sort of the undersized, gritty forwards that he used to go get from other places. He sees a little bit of that in McLaughlin's game. So yeah, I think Bruce understands the importance of this one tonight as far as what it could do for Auburn in the standings. And you do not want to roll into Saturday on a two-game losing streak.
No. Absolutely not. All right, we're halfway done here on the Tuesday Drive. Plenty of time for you to join in. We do have Jake Crane of Crane & Company joining us at the bottom of the hour. But until then, phone lines are open, 334-321-1390. Come on in here on the Tuesday Drive.
And Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7. And online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of the drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email the drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome in to hour number two of the Tuesday Drive. Hope everybody is doing well, staying dry on what's just been sort of a dreary day. I got some decent rain during the middle of the day, and looks like we're going to have a little more through tomorrow, but it looks much better for the weekend. So just hang on. It is winter in Auburn. Weather can change 30, 40 degrees in a day.
Are the rumors that there's some serious cold coming around the bend?
Yeah. I've heard that. I haven't checked it to be sure, but I sort of expect it. Usually we get a blast sometime, in March.
What if I told you early next week there's a day with a low in the 20s?
Well, I think Sunday was going to be a low in the 30s. That's as far as I'd looked ahead.
Sunday night, Monday morning, looking like it could be real cold. But some nice days in between, maybe some days where you can play some baseball games.
That would be nice. Got baseball starting Friday. And let's see, Cade Fisher is the former Florida, the Florida transfer, the lefty, is going to be getting the start for opening night on Friday night. I can't wait. I mean, that's Valentine's Day, and Tex was talking about that yesterday. I asked the better half about that too. I'm really, really looking forward to experiencing the new Plainsman Park. So Friday, a three-game series against Holy Cross, and then Auburn turns around and plays Tuesday and Wednesday. So they need to have five starting pitchers ready and look for a lot of new faces, both on the field and on the mound. So
Auburn went to the tournament in 22 and 23, but a disappointing season last year, and we'll see if they can we'll see if they can bounce back after I mean, didn't Auburn lose the first six or seven in conference play? Maybe more than that. But it was a real tough start.
It was a rough start, and Auburn never really got it going last year. So, expected bounce back, and you know, hopefully the weather cooperates for big crowds this weekend.
When you're in a league this good, like there's you could have three top 10 teams in your first three series.
Oh yeah, and it's just like basketball,
and you need
it is just like the situation in basketball.
You get to play a few more in basketball as far as like the series, you know what I mean, versus the you know, you play the games in basketball versus, you know, those you know, the 10 series that you have in league play. But like for Auburn, you know, you fall behind, you know, you lose your first 7, your first 8 in league play, and those, you know, it's real tough to dig out of a hole like that, even to get to 12 wins, 13 wins in SEC play, which can get you in postseason consideration. But Auburn, there's the hope that they can be more competitive in SEC play than they were last year.
Yeah, so that's coming up this weekend. Tonight, it's Auburn Vanderbilt from Nashville, from Memorial Gymnasium, where it has been tough for Auburn through the years. They have won 7 of the last 8. But as Bruce Pearl pointed out, Vandy had won 13 straight before that. All right, we're just getting underway here in the second hour of the show, and hour number 2 is brought to you, as usual, by the good folks at the Orthopedic Clinic, East Alabama's go-to center for orthopedic care, with locations in Auburn and Opelika, on the web at orthoclinic.com. We'd love for you to join in.
We're going to go up until 6. We are carrying pregame coverage on Wings 94.3.
Right.
Don't switch over. But if you do switch over to Wings 94.3, I guess. I don't know. I don't know how the modern technology works. We'll track you no matter what. But we've got Andy and Randall live from Nashville on Wings 94.3 starting at 6 o'clock. Auburn and Vanderbilt, part of a loaded Tuesday night in the SEC.
And that's the reason we couldn't have Andy on with us earlier today. He will be on tomorrow during the drive. But you can join us right now. Call us on the Drive hotline, sponsored by Skybar. That number's 334-321-1390.
You can also text the show, 334-564-1840, on the Drive text box, sponsored by our good friends at Southeastern Industrial Contractors. They also sponsor the podcast, available however you listen to podcasts. You look at Vanderbilt, Bill, and they're 17-6. Mm-hmm. They could get win number 18 with a win tonight.
They get over 500 in conference.
They've only had the last 13 seasons of, you know, you start in 2012, 2013. They've only had 2 20-win seasons since then. You know, they went.
And that's a very proud basketball program. I mean, they have a very rich basketball history.
Yeah, made the NCAA tournament twice, controversially, as you remember, because they were pretty close to 500 overall. They weren't a 20-win team in 15-16 or 16-17, and they got into the they got in as a bubble team, and folks were sort of, you know, questioning whether or not they had the resume. They haven't won a tournament game since 2011-2012, and they're having one of their best seasons in recent memory with new coach Mark Byington.
I'm just looking. I mean, they've been in the tournament. It was, 18 times. Yep. They've been in the tournament, and they've been to the Sweet 16 6 times. So, I mean, Vandy has had successful seasons in the past, and they're having their best in quite a while. All right, let's get to the Drive hotline, and Yellowhammer gets us started this hour. Hey, Yellowhammer.
Hey, afternoon.
What's up, Hammer?
I got a radical thought.
Oh, boy.
Okay.
Drew, finger on the button. Get ready.
Well, you know how in the past there have been teams where their identity centered around just one or two people, and that's kind of limiting in a way. So if we look at Auburn basketball, we talk about Janai being a very prominent part of it, but what if they did this sort of radical thing, you know, operated hypothetically as if we had no Janai at all, and built everything around the rest of the people and sprinkled him in wherever. But, I mean, you know, build something in addition to that beyond him. And it happened in the past. The last couple games is there where he wasn't there. It worked out. So I'm just wondering if that wouldn't be a way to do things, at least for a while, a little bit.
Well, I mean, it's not as though, I mean, Auburn doesn't play with Janai being the star and taking the bulk of the shots or anything through the season. I mean, you look at it, and all year long has had four or five players averaging double figures, and
six different guys
that at any time could go out and score double figures. So the best thing, one of the best things about this team, Yellowhammer, has been that it has been so unselfish that they have been willing to give the ball up. Like, you know, in the past, or on a lot of teams, there's a player that if the ball goes to them, you know, it's not coming back. It's going to be shot. But that's not been the case with this Auburn team. One of the things that's just been a bit of a problem is Janai not being 100% lately. Hasn't been able to, you know, function at the level that he was before he was injured.
Well, he's an inside presence, so I mean,
oh, absolutely.
But so we're calling on someone else to step in there.
Great stuff, Yellowhammer. Appreciate hearing from you. Always enjoy it. And Bill, are you familiar with Bill Simmons has popularized the idea of like the Ewing theory, which is the notion that some teams, the star player can take up so much of the gravity and so much of the offense that you don't realize how good the other players are until you have to play for an extended period without that star player. And he sort of like there was a I think Bill Simmons had a fan who was a hardcore Knicks fan of the 90s and always thought that whenever Patrick Ewing left the court, the other guys would get better without him. And there are examples where it's like people point to the Tennessee team the year after Peyton Manning left, or the Patriots without Drew Bledsoe, although Tom Brady ended up being the best quarterback in, like, that wasn't exactly an example of like, oh, the other guys just needed, like turns out Tom Brady just needed an opportunity and the other guys are who you more or less thought they were. I don't think Janai is a candidate for Ewing theory, you know, a Ewing theory situation where there's secretly a better five, you know, available. But I would think if the injuries really limit him, then suddenly you're talking about like, you know, is there a version of this team where you have to start rethinking things around how you deploy Janai and how you deploy the other guys. Although again, you get back to the question we were talking about. I mean, that's like where you miss Jalen Williams more than anywhere else, right? Is the extra outside shooting.
Right. The threat that's gonna draw somebody out there on him to create more space.
Which you don't really have right now with a forward or a front court player other than Janai Broome right now, which makes him incredibly valuable.
Janie is shooting 29%. 28.6%, 10 of 35 from outside.
And opposing defenses and opposing coaches know that. And so when it's Dylan and Chaney, or when it's really any combination of forwards that doesn't include Janai, right? When it's Turtle and Chaney, when it's Dylan and Chris.
Turtle is 2 for 12 shooting threes.
What's then, Chris?
Chris is 2 of 10.
Okay.
He's only taken 10 threes.
Yeah, I mean, I just when it's really any combination of forwards, you know, that doesn't include Janai, I just think it becomes real tough to space the floor offensively. You can live defensively with a lot of it, but you're putting a lot of pressure on the other guys to create offense without the outside shooting that you get with. I mean, Bruce was playing 4 out and 5 out at times with, you know, last season with Janai and Jalen in the front court, and now that's something where you gotta figure out how to do this another way. And Florida, you know, they took every opportunity to sort of take advantage of those matchups.
Yeah, I mean, and the four you were talking about, if Auburn were to, you know, think about going 4 out with Chad and Miles, Denver and Tahad all in the game at the same time, the worst 3-point shooter of those four is Chad at 39%. 39%.
Now you maybe create some defensive problems, right?
Yeah,
you don't have the rim protection that you want to have with Janai and four undersized players as an option. But that could be a, you know, for periods of time, I'd love to see sort of the I'd love to see the one post lineup get a run just to see what it could do offensively.
Yeah, and an interesting. I mean, that's an interesting thought. And again, I would think that tonight might be an opportunity to see that. With Vandy not having, you know,
Miles is about as big as these Vandy front court players, right?
He may not be
as tall,
quite as
maybe
he may be an inch or two shorter, but he's probably 25 pounds lighter than those guys. And Chad, my goodness, Chad is significantly lighter than those other guys.
Easier for us to say from over here.
Yeah, you're right about that. Again, the broadcast can be heard over on our sister station, Wings 94.3, with the pregame coming up in about 20 minutes.
You think Texas gives Bama a scare tonight?
I don't know.
That line's only four and a half, depending on where you shop.
It just, for some reason, I don't feel like it. So, I mean, I've been wrong a lot of times this year.
You know, Texas would need to.
It feels to me like Mississippi State's got a shot against Florida. Obviously, I'm concerned about Vandy. But I don't know. I don't feel like this is a great matchup for Texas.
Well, Texas
has been struggling lately.
Just dropped the game to Vanderbilt over the weekend, and Texas has they have not played well.
They've lost three out of four
of late.
Remember they got off to that, what was it, 0-2 or 3 start, then played well. Maybe they've just gone through another bad spell and they're about to turn it around. They've got talent.
Had a stretch where they played two really close home games against Auburn and Tennessee early in conference play.
And then they played better.
Beat Missouri and A&M in back-to-back games, which are still, you know, those are two. Those, if Texas is on the bubble, the fact that they beat Missouri and A&M could end up being really important wins for them back in January. This is a stretch where it's like, are you going to make your tournament stand? You lost at home to Arkansas. You lost at Vanderbilt. After Alabama, their next three are Kentucky at home, at South Carolina, and at Arkansas. That's how they finish the month. It's like these are games, you know, and you don't want to let the loss, you don't want to let the loss column grow.
No.
Out of control either. Like, I mean, Kentucky would be a great win at home. South Carolina, Arkansas are games that you probably should win. Well, we'll see about that. At Arkansas.
Arkansas's, you know, getting better. There's not much difference in Texas and Arkansas now when you look at their overall.
Well, they beat
resumes.
Austin. They beat them in Austin earlier.
They did.
Arkansas beat Texas in Austin. So, I mean, tonight, Texas is a team that matches up pretty well in the sense that they've got some players that want to play wide open, up and down offensive basketball, whether it's Trey or Kaluma. I know Mark was injured, but I guess the injury report says that he's going to play tonight. But it's I mean, I wonder if they've got the defense for even at home, if they've got the defense.
They're
going to
be a lot of points.
Bama.
They're most likely going to be a lot of points in that ball game.
Over-unders.
Neither team's strength is defense.
I think over-unders like 170 or something for that one.
That makes sense.
Yeah, a lot of points.
All right, we'll get to our first break of hour number two. Don't forget, Jake Crane of Crane & Company joins us a little after 5:30. So we'd love for you to join us in the meantime here on the Tuesday Drive.
The Drive 90, toll free at 888-382-7502 or email the drive at espnau.com.
Welcome back into the Drive, 20 minutes after 5 o'clock here on this Tuesday with Bill and Dan. Man, tough loss for the Auburn women last night. They've been playing better lately. Nearly, you know, knocked off a ranked opponent last night in Norman, but came all the way back in double digits and then lost. With some late free throws. I think it was 73-71 last night. The Auburn men looking to avoid it. You've said it a couple of times, Dan. Man, they do not want to be headed to Tuscaloosa on a two-game losing streak.
No, and I also think there's an aura. I kind of combined those two words there.
I like that.
An era, yeah. That's Taylor Swift. There's an aura or an air of invincibility that was damaged by Florida.
It was deflated for sure. Yes.
Right. That bubble was popped a little bit. And so I think
which can be good for a team. I mean, you know, sometimes you win it's great because winning breeds winning, but at times you forget what it's like and you just feel like it can't happen again.
Some teams recover from that beautifully.
Yes. Other teams don't.
Some teams don't.
Some teams can't handle it. It's like, oh, we didn't think we would ever lose again, and now we've lost. Oh, my goodness, it's the world's come to an end.
You know, I think folks would point to, I'm trying to think of like an athlete or a team, Bill, where it's like, oh, they took that at Tyson. Like when folks would tell you, like post-Buster Douglas, Tyson was never really the same athlete ever again once that initial invincibility
was on the other hand, Ali,
sure,
and Foreman. It's like lose, and it's like that didn't phase them one bit as far as their mental approach.
Well, Foreman went into a depression and disappeared for 20 years.
Yeah, that was after a feud. I mean early.
Oh, sure. Well, no. Foreman loses the Rumble in the Jungle and then takes
a
15-year break after the admission.
But I mean, you know, it used to be.
You're right. Ali's a great example.
It used to be. Watch when Alabama rarely lost, their next game they probably weren't going to lose, but it was going to be a struggle. They just, you know, it would take them a little while to get back up and be functioning at full speed.
Sure, and we've seen some teams, I mean, the NCAA, it's not exactly the same thing, but we've seen some teams that lose as an early seed in the tournament in a big upset, a historic upset. Virginia gets bounced as a one seed by UMBC. Purdue, right? These teams, a year later, made lengthy tournament runs as sort of a response to that. To that adversity the year before. Now, it's not always the same collection of players.
No. Auburn would sure like to be added to that list.
Auburn would love to be one of those teams that, you know, was upset the year before. And you know what? And this is when you showcase that mettle, right? Like, this is when you showcase, like, absolutely, all right, you just lost a real disappointing home games. You just lost a real disappointing home game. You've got another one. You've got another opportunity on the road against Vanderbilt in a big game Saturday. This is championship time.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. So
ESPN graphic just said Florida has never beaten back-to-back
ranked teams.
Yeah, wow. So one would think that they would lose.
Wow,
the state
you would think you would think winning national championships.
I think they're beaten. They didn't play. Although we've looked at this, Bill.
I know there weren't that many ranked teams. There weren't in the SEC.
Yeah, in either year, Florida played ranked.
I would think maybe in the tournament you might get back-to-back ranked teams.
I wonder if they're not counting that. I don't know.
Maybe it's regular season.
Yeah, maybe. But it's I think Florida wins tonight in Starkville. I like the way that Florida team's played. I don't want to go crazy. I know it's tough to win on the road in the SEC. It's really tough to win on the road back-to-back in the SEC. But I think Florida's got a team rolling right now, and with Clayton back, they're going to be a tough out.
And here's something for you. State is just 8-3 at home. 8-3 at home. I look through the SEC home records. Auburn 10-1, Bama 10-1, Florida 11-1, Texas A&M 10-1, Tennessee 13-1, Missouri 15-1, Vandy 12-1.
I was
Mississippi State's 8-3.
I was really, really impressed by the Florida front court. Not just Condon, who is SEC Player of the Week, who earned it, but also Hauk and also Klavchar. Well, you know what? An editorial note. I think yesterday I said Klavchar was Slovenian when he might be Slovakian, or I said he was Slovakian when he might be Slovenian. Whichever one is right, I got it wrong yesterday. So I want to make a note there.
But he was impressive.
Quick quiz. Which one is right of the two? Do you know?
I do not know.
He is Slovenian. I'm checking it right now. He was the guy that we taught. Urban Klavchar was a superstar
in the under-20.
Yeah, in the Euro U-20 league that got on Florida's radar, and he's the kid who hit the two three-pointers
on the six-point possession.
Yeah,
that was
randomly watching a Florida tournament game over the weekend from it was the 94 Final Four. I was watching highlights of it, and there was that exact play but it was Duke. A three-pointer was in the air. Florida got called for a loose ball foul, and Duke got another opportunity.
Yeah, sadly, the folks around me were like, "He didn't get fouled on that shot." No, he didn't. But there was a foul called underneath. It would have been better just to have a 4-point trip.
Have an and one. Yeah. But that's a and again, what bothered me more about, I mean, the outcome, the rule's the rule. What bothered me was that in a game where the offensive rebounding had been so physical and the box outs have been, I mean, like we said, you can tell Condon is an Aussie rules football player from the way he boxes out and the way he rebounds. And it's like, that's, you got to do something. You got to hit a guy with a crowbar to get called for something down low like that. I don't know.
I mean,
This is definitely
going to sound like I'm watching this through orange and blue glasses, but it just feels like even with all of Auburn's success up to this point, that some other teams can be a little more physical underneath than Auburn can. I don't know why, and maybe I'm completely wrong. Maybe the numbers wouldn't back that up. It just appears that there can be a little more pushing against than from Auburn underneath, for sure.
Yeah, I think there's maybe something to that. I don't know if it's anecdotal or if it's that Janai and Dylan have been around so long that the referees, you know, they know the tricks and they know everything to look for. But I think there's what I've noticed more is how tight the whistles get in the second half of some of these games. I thought Florida and Tennessee were both really clear examples of stuff that was they were letting it go in the first 15, 17 minutes of this game. Now it's a foul. Like which can be frustrating to watch
it also makes the game much longer. It's like, goodness, we're seeing some games that drag out forever. As we were talking about, at least the SEC Network gives you 2.5 hours usually in between games, although they're not tonight. They've got Auburn Vandy followed by Georgia A&M. Going from 6 to 8. So yeah, they're doing just like ESPN.
I would tell Georgia and A&M, like, brace for that game maybe not starting on time.
Yeah, that's right.
And maybe even starting on ESPN News or something, depending on how Auburn Vanderbilt goes. But no, your general so the hypothesis that Auburn's front court, and I think especially Janai Broome, doesn't get the same consideration from the referees as previous star players in the SEC.
You know, I would say on one end of the court. I think Janai, when he's away from the basket, maybe gets away with a little more than some guys. He can be very handsy when he's away from the basket, and I've thought, oh, that could be called a few times, and it hasn't been. So I think he gets some respect when he's a little more in the open court.
Tell you what, for 3 years too. It's a constant dialogue with the referees, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
It's not something that happened this year, you know, as he was on, like, for 3 years. And again, some guys play like that. Tim Duncan played like that, where there was sort of a constant dialogue as to why was that a foul? Why wasn't that a foul? Is this position okay? Is that sometimes that can show up in what's called and what isn't called.
Yeah, I mean, because look, everybody out there is, as far as I know, is human.
For now.
Yeah.
For now.
That's what I mean. As far as I know. All right.
Nobody's shooting sparks out of their ears quite yet when things go wrong.
Yep. All right. We'll go ahead and get to our
could have that doing balls and strikes. You know, before too long, right? Could have the robots.
I have no problem with that. I mean, there's some sports you can't do that with, but I think with baseball, for balls and strikes, you can. You definitely can. I've heard, and we'll wait just a second before we get to the bottom, because I've heard people constantly concerned about the first downs, and there seems like now. There are fewer measurements than there ever used to be. It's just like, well, it's close. Bring the
ballpark
chains.
Ballpark it. Yeah.
Bring the chains. And that's something it would be a little more difficult, but it would be nice to know, because I don't ever have any idea of exactly where they're going to spot it to start the 10. And then they just sort of line it up as best they can, and there's going to be your 10 yards from there. But yeah, balls and strikes. Again, I'm a traditionalist for the most part in baseball, but I'd love to see a consistent strike zone.
And Manfred wants, I think Manfred wants an automated strike zone in baseball by the end of the decade. And so I think we will have, well, you know, every year we will take steps towards that at the professional
more,
level.
More and more. I think it's more and more in the minors, right? Yeah. All right. We'll get to our bottom of the hour break. Jake Crane of Crane & Company joins us on the other side. Stick with us here on the Tuesday Drive.
Call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email thedrive@espnau.com.
Welcome back into the Tuesday Drive. Bill and Dan here in the studio, Drew at the controls, and we're going to head to the Drive hotline and welcome in our good friend from Crane & Company, and Jake. So here's what we talked about during the last break to tell you, I mean, not that there's nothing else going on, But we're going through the pros and cons of an automated strike zone.
Yeah, what did y'all land on?
I don't know. We were just trying.
I think I like a challenge system. You know, unless we got the thing totally straightened out. Like, I don't mind, you know, giving major league umpires two or three, you know, giving major league managers two or three challenges a game and saying, was that really a ball or a strike? Let's check. Like a tennis match.
Anything like, that slows the game down more. I'm not crazy.
But they've got those tennis challenges down pretty quickly. You know, they can go to the screen and check to see what the Rolex computer. Told them is,
look, Jake. Jake, I'm even though both my sons were pitchers, I'm more on the hitters. I'd rather have a strike zone that I know is going to be a strike, no matter who's throwing it.
Well, look, my thing is, some of my favorite parts of baseball are about when the managers and umpires get into it and they got to toss somebody. So if we're going to go to the robot strike zone, can there at least be a robot and each coach has a robot and the robots can fight it out? Like, we can maybe
rock them,
like,
sock them, absolutely.
Oh, so you,
like,
you think
then they could just fight it out and then you toss the coach? I mean,
I like that. Yeah, that would probably add some viewership to Major League Baseball.
So does the umpire
figured it out, guys?
Does the umpire gets a battle bot and the coach, the manager, gets a battle
That's
bot?
That's right. Each team has one.
Yeah, we're just, all right, pick up the sticks.
He knocked his block up.
And whichever robot wins, that's who gets the call.
Oh, I think once or twice a game, a BattleBots break is a novel.
The crowd would love it.
Yeah, there have been worse ideas floated out there as far as what you can do with baseball.
What happens when you get brilliant brains together
It is a monster Tuesday in the SEC.
Really is.
I mean, we can talk about Auburn, Florida, and sort of what went wrong for the Tigers. But this is a gigantic Tuesday for all of the teams near the top of the SEC.
Well, it's massive. And I mean, you know, we've kind of hit, you know, we're about a hole or two in the back nine of the conference season. And, you know, while there's some teams that are out of it, there are a lot that are still in it. When you have this much parity, I mean, I put four losses at the mark. I don't think you can win it with four losses. Maybe if it comes down to a tiebreaker, who knows? But as far as Auburn goes, you know, the game against Florida, a loss was coming. Mm-hmm. You were just wondering how it was going to happen. Look, you have nights where you don't shoot well, but I thought Auburn's effort defensively, and Bruce Pearl talked about this, it seemed like Florida played like they had more on the line than Auburn did. And in reality, it's still all up in the air. And Auburn has a mature team. That's, you know, you got 10 seniors. You would think they would understand, but you're still dealing with human beings. And if I'm supposed to get upset about being 21-2, 9-1 in the conference at this point, I'm just not going to get upset unless we don't learn from it. Because it's not a loss if it's a lesson. And I would much rather eat one now and the guys get back together and start playing well as we head into March than to lose to Yale again in the first round or something like that. So I'm not as down. I think Auburn going to Vandy tonight, I think going on the road is actually a good thing, believe it or not, for Auburn. I think it rallies the troops even more, even though Vanderbilt's a quality club and it's a tough place to play. We're going to find out a little bit more about this Auburn team. But, yeah, I mean, look, Alabama's going to Texas. Florida's going to Mississippi State. That's a huge one for both of those teams. I mean, every game at the top is so consequential already. And the margin for error in this league is so small, you just, you know, if you're going to drop one, it can't turn into three, right? If you're going to get on a hot streak, even if you lose one here or there, it's going to be okay. And then we all know what's coming down the pipe Saturday.
Yeah, and then Tennessee's at Kentucky. I mean, it is crazy that four of the top five teams in the nation are here in the SEC, and all four of those teams are on the road tonight. And it wouldn't be a shock if any of those teams – you know, dropped those road games, but that's what's really interesting. I think at least one of them takes a loss tonight. Obviously they're four of the top five teams in the country for a reason, and sure wouldn't be a shock if they all won. But in this league, it sure wouldn't be a surprise to see at least one go down.
No, not at all. I wouldn't be surprised to see multiple teams go down. I mean, you just never know, and that's the fun of it. And when it's your team, you know, that's the brunt of it. And again, it makes it interesting, that's for sure. But the good news is there's so many good teams in the SEC, there's really not a lot of bad losses out there in the conference. I mentioned this, guys, before conference play even started. The league being good, even though it makes it tougher to navigate, it kind of softens the blow of a loss. I mean, say what you want. Yeah, Auburn lost, and they didn't look good. But you lost to the number six team in the country. It's not like you lost to William and Mary or, you know, Appalachian State or something like that. So you can come back from it. What I'm interested
in. That was last year. That was last year when App State beat Auburn.
That's exactly right. That was a bad loss.
I thought you were going to pull. That was on the road. You know, that's a tough place to play. But I've been there. Sunbelt basketball. Hey, Mark Byington, a guy who knows how to win Sunbelt basketball games. Vanderbilt's coach he was at JMU the last couple of seasons. But I thought you were going to go Doug Gottlieb there and hit us with what, Nobody State. On the schedule, Jake?
Yeah, I actually forgot Doug Gottlieb was even coaching after, only what he says in the media gets publicized because they're obviously struggling over there. But, guys, I'm to the point now where, you know, obviously you want to win the SEC. You want to get that number one overall seed so you can stay in the South. But if you're Auburn, I'm sitting here looking at it, and a lot of people were surprised that Auburn stayed number one. But when you look at the resume, how is anybody surprised? I mean, if Duke would have won, they would have jumped Auburn, and they should have. But, I mean, Auburn's got – if Auburn wins tonight, I think that's 14 quad one wins. So my question is, like, how many games can Auburn lose and still feel comfortable about getting the number one overall seed? I mean, Joe Lunardi acts like, you know, at this point, there's still a lot of cushion.
Yeah, I think Alabama could mount a challenge to it, you know, especially if they were to win the head-to-heads. You know what I mean? Like that's a team that could. And with Duke, I keep waiting for the relative lack of strength of the rest of the conference to really start hurting them in some of the computer numbers, but it hasn't happened yet. But no, I think Auburn, like it's a testament to the record that Auburn has built so far that they can lose that Florida game the way they did and remain the number one team, and deservedly so. Based on, I mean, this would be quad one win number 14. That would be a new record for an SEC men's basketball team in a single season. And they've got another month of quad one games to play after the one they play tonight. So I think they, you know, Duke would have had a real argument with a win against Clemson. Bama will have a real argument
over Auburn.
Yes, and they have the head-to-head win for sure. And if things work out for Bama this week, they absolutely will have a good argument for number one next week. But no, I think the fact that you can lose at home the way Auburn did on Saturday and keep your number one spot shows you how strong the overall resume is.
Yeah, and guys, I love the quad system and the way that college basketball does a lot of things. But I just have one bone to pick with it, and it's the same thing with ranked wins in football. I don't like that you can get a quad one win and then 2 weeks go by and then it's not a quad one win and that team doesn't play well. I think it should count for at the time you played them, was it a quad one win or not? If you win it, it should go in the bank and it should stay in the bank. Just like when we looked at ranked wins in college football, I think if you beat a team week three that's ranked in the top 25, and by the end of the year they're not ranked, that should still count as a ranked win. I don't like the way we go about it where it fluctuates. I wish that would change.
No, that's a great point. I mean, that's happened so many times. And a team that is probably deserving of being ranked could play three or four other really, really good teams, lose those, not be ranked, and then those teams don't get the credit for it. So no, I'm with you 100%.
Well, and I think it would also not – it doesn't factor in that when you're playing a team that's extremely hot, if they were to go into a slump after that game, your win would be punished for it, when it's like, well, they were 15-0 or 15-1 when we play. You know, you think about – I don't know, like Auburn against Ole Miss last year, right? Like Auburn, you know, Ole Miss was Ole Miss. I think had either not lost a game, or they were
15 in a row to start.
Yeah, and then Auburn plays them, and then after that, it's one. I get why it's sort of a living, breathing thing that can change every week based on, you know, where you are in the net rankings that week. But I understand the downsides of it, which I think are that you can it doesn't factor in how you're playing the moment the game is played.
Yeah, without a doubt. And, I mean, you know, you look at the losses, too. I mean, you could have a loss on the road. Like, I think Oklahoma basketball is a great example, right? They went undefeated in the non-conference. If you played Oklahoma at the beginning of the year before the non-conference, that was a good loss up until a certain point where now you're at the end and you're like, wait a minute, you know, that was a quad one game when we played them. Now we lost it and it's quad two or quad three. I just wish we could bake it in. I think it would make things a little bit simpler at the end too, because teams change throughout the season and you should get the value of beating them regardless of when you're played, even though they do change. That's just something I hope that they look at. I mean, they may not, whatever. I just hope they don't expand the tournament. But, man, if Auburn can get one tonight, it's a quality road win. They have a massive size advantage. But, guys, Vanderbilt's out-rebounded teams with a massive size advantage. And what worries me, they do it by out-efforting you. Auburn has got to have absolute balls-to-the-wall effort tonight, even though they're this quote-unquote superior team. Because if you don't shoot well and Vandy out-efforts you, you will lose up there. Ask Tennessee, ask Kentucky, ask really anybody that's gone in that building.
Yeah, that is. And that's something I was talking about a little while ago, Jake, is that I will be very disappointed if you don't see the energy, the effort that we'd seen from Auburn all year. We didn't see it Saturday. Don't know, you know, all the reasons why. Quite a few factors could have played in there. But they're going to have to do that. And they're going to have to, as you were talking about defensively, they've got to step it up defensively. Florida had way too many open looks the other day. And you're right, Vandy is going to – they're going to get after you. They're not going to have the size or the athleticism, I don't think, that Auburn does. But Mark Byington has brought in some veterans that know how to play and they know how to win.
Yeah, well, and here's what I think happened against Florida, guys. I think it was two things. You know, I don't think Auburn, like, I don't think it's that they didn't play hard. They didn't play relentless. There's one thing to play hard. It's another thing to play all out. And at the end of the day, if you play all out, you can make up for some deficiencies that happen throughout a game, like not shooting well or the calls not going your way or a free throw line disparity. Florida played all out without Elijah Martin, too, now, who's an absolute stud, by the way. Remember him from his FAU days. But Florida played all out and Auburn didn't. And then I think for the first time all year, Auburn let negativity affect their effort throughout that game. And typically with mature teams, that's a weapon that they have you don't see happen against them. They use that against other people. So this is why you have to lay it all out. This is why you're so deep. This is why you have to lay it all out. This is why you're so deep. Deep. This is why you have rotations. It's like hockey. You go in there during your time and you go all out and then somebody will come get you.
And I think the relentlessness, I mean, you saw the frustration from Auburn play itself out against Florida in a couple of ways. You saw some uncharacteristic fouls. And you're right, that's something from a team as experienced as Auburn. It's a little bit surprising. Vanderbilt also incredibly experienced. You know, they're a little bit like, they're built kind of like LSU or Ole Miss, but I think Byington gets more of an Ole Miss level of effort out of the guys, and they're probably a little bit better than Vanderbilt. They're more experienced, certainly, than Vanderbilt, but they overcome the lack of prototypical size with all out effort. What about some of the other games in the conference, Jake? You got Florida going to Starkville tonight. You got Bama in Austin.
Tennessee in Lexington.
You got Tennessee and Lexington. What are you thinking?
Man, look, as far as Alabama and Texas goes, I just don't think Texas defensively is good enough to stop Alabama enough. I think they can score with them for a while. Trey Johnson's a bucket. If Pope gets hot, he's a problem. But it's really down low where I think Texas is going to struggle with Diabate, with Cliff Omiyori, even though he's not a huge offensive threat. It's second chance points. Grant Nelson. I just don't know if Texas has enough defensively to slow him down. Kentucky, man, you talk about a defense that struggles. Tennessee is exactly the opposite of what – and it's crazy because Kentucky went down there and shot the lights out. If Kentucky doesn't shoot well against Tennessee, they're going to lose. But I tell you what as well, guys, this Florida-Mississippi State game may be the most underrated game of the night. Florida really needs this one too, because if you lose this one, this almost negates your win at Auburn,
right?
Because it gets you to that four loss mark. But Mississippi State, I know they're able to hang on at Georgia. they've kind of started to spiral a little bit when it comes down to not making the NCAA tournament, but having a good seed in the NCAA tournament. And a win over a top-four ranked Florida could really, really jump their numbers back up and really kind of jumpstart them in this back nine of the conference season. So don't be shocked if that Florida Mississippi. And you wonder how Florida's going to respond, right?
Right.
From a huge win where you did go all out, because Mississippi State will punch you right in the face now.
Yeah, it should be a great night. We always have a great time talking with you, Jake. Let everybody know what you've got coming up, and if they don't know already, how they can find you.
Yeah, man, we're really easy to find. Talking a ton of college basketball. Led off with Auburn and Alabama today. We got a big preview out there of what's going on Saturday. Even though both teams need to survive tonight, that's huge. If you want to watch it, it's YouTube's the easiest way. We're on Roku, Daily Wire Plus, all that, CRAIN and Company, and then Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and all that.